comfortable.
Yeah, I'm just trying. This chair does squeak a bit, so I'm just trying to get into a position where it's not going to squeak.
Perfect podcast seat.
Yeah.
The squeaky seat. I'm going to leave this in. It's good fun. Hello. Welcome back to the Security Has a Podcast with me, Jack, and...
And it's me, AC. Welcome back again.
Hello. We're doing another special episode today because... Because we haven't quite got our act together enough to do like a regular thing where we come up with a cool format, and we're not like those professional podcasters, that other Gerry Anderson-y podcasty thing. What's that?
It's got a very catchy name. It's called something. Something to do with Gerry something or a podcast Anderson.
I'm gonna turn myself down. You're very loud in my ears.
I do apologize. I'll speak very softly, but that's not going to work for everyone else.
No one else will hear you. Okay, so let's get to the point. The point is that today was quite a special day for us, at least. The rest of you may not have cared at all, but for us, at least, it was the release, at least when we're recording this, which is the 11th of May, 2019. Today was the release of the last episode in the current series of Century 21 Tech Talk on YouTube. Andrew, what is this thing? What's it all about?
Well, Jack, it's funny you should ask, because I'm going to tell you. Century 21 Tech Talk, for those who don't know, which is probably most of you, so talking to you guys, it's essentially a mini or micro series featuring brains and other characters voiced by David Graham discussing various vehicles and their technologies from the different worlds of Gerry Anderson, such as Thunderbirds, yes. Captain Scarlet, and so forth.
Yes, there are 9 episodes currently available to watch on YouTube. It's all, you know, free and everything. It's there for you to watch for your enjoyment. Each episode is, you know, between 5 and 10 minutes long-ish. It's a nice little quick thing to go through and, you know, just enjoy some, a little bit of humour in there as well, and just get some technical information about various Gerry Anderson vehicles. So gonna play in a clip for you right now in case you're not familiar, so enjoy.
Oh, hello there, folks. My name's Brains, and I'm the chief designer and engineer here at International Rescue. Welcome to the first in a series of briefings about some of the most advanced machinery in use in the 21st century. As agents of International Rescue, you have been granted security clearance by our commander, Jeff Tracy. But watch out for any suspicious activity during our briefing. You can never be too careful when there are enemies like the Hood and the Loose.
So, David Graham, back recording again. I think we should go back to the beginning. So, obviously, you know, those of you who've watched the series, you might have seen Andrew's name very prominently on the credits. My name also in there as well. We've sort of been working on this for some time now. The idea was originally Andrew's, so maybe you can share a little bit about how this all came about. Where did the idea come from to put on this show?
Well, I suppose it was milling around in my head somewhere, being the content or one of the content producers for the Gerry Anderson YouTube channel, and I think it was probably midway through last year, possibly last summer. I suddenly thought, wouldn't it be nice to have a little series of tech videos just talking about different craft and equipment, primarily from Thunderbirds, because it's the one that most people are familiar with. And, you know, initially I sort of thought, oh, well, perhaps myself or maybe Chris Dale or Chris Thompson might do some narration for it, something along those lines, just a little video, or possibly even yourself, Jack. You've collaborated on previous videos. One of the...
Well, that would have been awfully sweet, but I think what we ended up with was far better than people having to listen to me.
Oh, I don't know. I think the unanswerable Thunderbirds questions video is has been quite popular.
It that's seems a very good well. Video. I was watching rewatching that the other day. Actually, I really like that video. That's another video to watch after you finish Century 21 Tech Talk. Go and watch unanswerable Thunderbirds questions. That one was good fun. Yes, I like doing that.
It was indeed. We'll maybe even get a sequel to that at some point. But yes, but we're drifting a little here.
Yeah.
It just occurred to me. Well, David Graham, you know, he's still very much sharp as a tack, and his voice is in great order, and he can still do Brains and Parker. And in fact, listening to the official Gerry Anderson podcast, that's the name of the other one.
Oh yes, yeah, that thing. That's yeah, the one.
I knew I remembered it.
Yeah, I don't know who hosts it. Though. Oh no, heard of
it
them.
Was. Richard Anderson, Jimmy, James, I think.
Jim,
Joe 90. The guy who really loves Joe 90, that guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah. But anyway. I was thinking, yeah, well, David can do these voices. I heard him on the podcast. He can even still do Gordon. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be a lovely idea if he was able to do this? So I composed a little email to Jimmy, said, I'm thinking of doing this idea. What do you reckon? And by the way, any chance do you think David Graham might be interested in voicing it? So Jimmy said, yeah, great idea. I'll ask him. Me sitting here thinking, oh, well, he's not going to say yes. I mean, it's just a little, you know, thing.
Just a small little YouTube thing. Yeah,
just getting him to do Thunderbird's voices again like he does at conventions. It's not really going to interest him, I'm sure. And lo and behold, Jimmy came back, said, yes, David would love to do it. Can we have... I think it was 10 scripts at the time he asked for, and subject to those being completed, recording date would be approved.
So scripts were completed. You got David's confirmation that he was going to do it. Then script writing got underway.
I think actually it might have been a slight reverse of that. I think I might have written the first. I'm going to say 5 scripts before David was confirmed.
So confidently assuming that Brains would come into it in some form, though.
Hoping, or at least being optimistic, as you say, that Brains himself may become available. So that was probably confirmed, as I say, around about script number 5 being completed. And then that spurred me on to get the other 5 scripts written. Or at least 4 of the other ones, because this is where you come back into the story, Jack. Did indeed write the 10th script of Century 21
Tech
Talk.
The 10th one?
The 10th one.
However,
yes.
it's a mystery lost script. No one knows really what happened to it.
No, I mean, there are varying accounts of being lost.
I don't necessarily want to give too much away about this.
No.
Because is a script that exists that would have formed part of the first series. I think at this point we've given away the fact that there may be a second series.
I think we have, yes. Maybe a second
series. It's certainly
series.
Being talked about. And this 10th script may form part of the second series.
Yes, I think it's fair to say.
In some form, maybe.
With that level of vagueness, I think we've kept it reasonably up in the air as to whether or not this is actually going to happen. Certainly, I would like it to happen. That is no secret.
But basically, you wrote all 9 scripts. Was there something you were aiming to achieve? In terms of deciding which vehicles were going to be focused on, I mean... Obviously, you know, the 5 Thunderbird craft was going to be was top of the list in terms of what was going to be included. But were there any other ideas that came in? Were you determined to focus solely on Super Marination vehicles, or was there perhaps a temptation to lean towards other things?
Well, I think one of the main deciding factors in that is once David was confirmed for doing the recording, I tried to focus in on vehicles that his characters could talk about. So, having the 5 Thunderbird craft and Fab 1, I thought, well, it's going to be a cinch that he's going to do Brains for the Thunderbird craft and do Parker for Fab 1. because getting David and not having him do Parker at some point would be a complete missed opportunity.
I don't think it's possible.
So, yeah, I started thinking, well, what other voices could we have him do? So the first thing that sprung to mind was Professor Matic. Okay, so we got Fireball X05. That's a bit of an obvious one as well. And then I thought, well, Stingray, but then David wasn't really in Stingray. He did a lot of sort of guest character voices, including Alien of the Week. Yeah,
didn't have one kind of big main role character, in it, so, necessarily.
And then I figured, well, I kind of want to see if he can still sort of do Gordon again. And Gordon, according to the spin-off material and so forth, was in the Wasp. So I thought, well, maybe Gordon could do the briefing on Stingray. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting and sort of have a bit of cross-universe going on there. And then the other one was Scarlet. I thought, well, Scarlet is you know, another huge, hugely popular series. So why not get something from Scarlet in there as well? And it was actually, that was probably the most difficult one to decide on, because Scarlet has maybe not exactly one standout star vehicle, the obvious choice like Fireball or anything that has one vehicle in it, or, you know, sort of five equally important vehicles like Thunderbirds. So it was really for me a bit of a sort of a catch 22 between the Spectrum Pursuit vehicle and the Angel Interceptor. And in the end, I went for the Spectrum Pursuit vehicle because I thought, purely from a visual interest point, from the amount of various clips that you can find and the sheer amount of features that it has, it might be slightly easier to make a video out of that. Although it was a bit of a close call, so the SPV just about came out on top there. Of course, David had left association with Jerry by the time Scarlet rolled around. Would come back later, of course, to do other things like sort of other voices in Space Precinct. And
he did a couple of voices in Secret Service as
well. He did, that's right.
Uncredited. So, it wasn't long until he was back.
It wasn't a long absence at all. Yes, he did I'm right in saying he did one of the air traffic controllers in Mayday, Mayday.
Something like that, yes. And then he was Lord Hazelwell? Is that the name of the character?
Quite possibly. Yeah. I can't quite remember.
Testing my Secret Service knowledge there. Anyway, yeah, so he voiced that character in More Haste, Less Speed as well.
So, with that in mind, really, I just thought, well, let's just keep it a bit of cross-universe going on there. So I just kept him in character as Brains. Yes. And
the cross-universe thing is it's lovely. I love all that stuff.
It's a bit of a
obviously in the shows themselves, very few things exist that suggest that. Basically, the only thing is the MEV, which turns up in the beginning of Captain Scarlet, was also in Thunderbirds.
If you've got an eagle eye, an HD copy, and a microscope, you will probably be able to see Fire Flash in the background of one of the airport shots in Captain Scarlet as well. And,
yeah, little things like that. But it's, was that a particular thing you wanted to try and encourage? Was more of this cross-universe stuff where things from Stingray affect things in Thunderbirds and, you know, all that kind of thing? Was you were desperate to try and encourage more of that sort of thing?
I think what you got to remember is that TV21 was what started the encouragement of the whole thing,
and that's true.
And everyone raves about how great TV21 the comic is, and rightly so. I mean, it was doing things that no other comic, certainly no other British comic of the time, was doing. It was weaving an entire world together in a remarkable way that even today holds up incredibly well. But the idea of a shared universe is nothing new in fictional terms, and certainly these days you've got massive shared universes with the likes of the various Star Trek series and probably quite notably the Marvel Cinematic Universe with various characters and franchises coming together. So it's something I thought, well, here's an opportunity to acknowledge it. Why shy away from it? And of course, you know, if you're not comfortable with the idea of a shared universe, or if you prefer each show to just be its own separate thing, that's absolutely fine. You know, this is just one particular take on it. This is not anybody trying to say, oh, you must accept this. This is definitely the way it should be, because it's not. I mean, that's the great thing about the Gerry Anderson series. They're all so varied, and there's something to appeal to everyone. And if you don't like something a certain way, you don't have to accept that. So, you know, like it, dislike it, it's all good.
So in terms of sort of on that topic, looking at source material, when, you know, researching and putting all the facts together to talk about certain vehicles, what was your kind of pecking order in terms of figuring out, okay, we have to acknowledge the facts from this, because the continuity and things like that get messed up, you know, different sources say different things. What was your kind of number one? And then, you know, from there, figuring out, you know, what was the most reliable source? And then,
well, I think in hierarchical terms, you really have to go with on-screen evidence as the head honcho, okay, as number one. As you know yourself, Jack, on-screen evidence can contradict itself in places.
Yes, absolutely.
You can come up with all sorts of things like stock footage being used in various places and thus messing up the sequence of events.
You can have one shot where Thunderbird 2 is the same size as Fire Flash, and then another shot a moment later where it is dwarfed by Fire Flash.
Of course, yes. You have to write those things off as stylistic choices by the... You know,
you just have to work out what's the most plausible. The thing that makes the most sense here?
Exactly.
And then, I guess, what else is corroborated by the written spin-off material and things like that?
Yeah, so I probably would have gone in something in the order of on-screen TV evidence, audio stories being second, because you've got some audio adaptations that have additional information in them. Then technical manuals or things that are sort of pseudo-official. And then even going down as far as questions that people sort of have asked over the years, oh, why does Thunderbird 2 launch, you know, off a ramp instead of just launching vertically like it does at the Danger Zone, why does this, that, and the other happen? And I sort of thought, well, there's another way to explore these things. Let's try and answer some of these questions in a satisfactory way. And if they pose some more questions that people hadn't thought of before, well, there's another point for discussion. Let's give people something else to talk about.
Was that something that you were happy to do, or you had good fun doing? Was trying to answer some of these questions that had never been addressed before? You know, on the subject of Thunderbird 2, things like picking up Pod 4 at the end of a rescue on the ocean. How does Pod 4 get retrieved?
Yeah,
that was one of the ones that you answered.
That was great fun. I mean, again, TV21, I think, had provided various explanations for things like that in the past. But I thought, well, why not just go for the simplest explanation on this? Because we've seen something similar in the episode The Man from MI5, where Thunderbird 2 drops the pod on the water, but in order to do so, it actually descends all the way to the water itself and then releases the pod. So why not just reverse the process? It makes just as much sense and straightforward. And then there was other things like my fondness for Thunderbird 3, as you may know, Jack. I'm a big Thunderbird 3 fan. Always felt like in the original series it got a bit hard done by. Didn't really get enough to do.
Didn't see
it enough times. And I thought, well, there's nothing to say that Thunderbird 3 doesn't have a few more features that we haven't seen before.
Exactly.
So I decided, well, it would make sense for a big spacecraft, an advanced rescue vehicle, to have some sort of manipulator armature. So why not say that it has this armature, it's positioned here, and it's used for rescue maneuvers. So again, something to be explored.
Yes, it's just something that kind of explains its purpose a little more. May not have necessarily seen it in the series. It's not necessarily something that was explained in spin-off material, but it's just something extra to give it more function. People can take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't want to suppose that Thunderbird 3 had a grappling arm of some sort, then they don't have to. They don't have to accept it.
Absolutely fine.
Yeah. Okay, so in terms of writing it, was there anything that stood out as difficult to get around? Were there any episodes that you perhaps struggled with more than others?
Well, I would think that both you and I would have a virtual encyclopedic knowledge of every Thunderbirds episode. That's not to sound big-headed or anything, but I think it's fair to say that
we've watched Thunderbirds a lot.
Yes,
and
a lot.
As anyone listening to this podcast will know, I have a blog entirely dedicated to writing a lot about Thunderbirds.
Yeah,
and Andrew has contributed to that. So
It was straightforward. To do Thunderbirds 1 to 5 and Fab 1 was straightforward. The best parts were sort of writing the intricate details and knowing that there was plenty of on-screen material to back those up. That was great fun. Even Stingray was pretty good. And I think the one I probably would have struggled most with was Fireball XL5, because I freely admit I'm not as au fait with the series. I've seen it twice. I've seen all the episodes twice. And, you know, I know various things about the ship and so forth. But,
yeah,
you know, it's just when you don't know off the top of your head, oh, does this definitely feature in an episode? Does something else happen? It can be quite tricky to put things down on page in a coherent way.
Yeah.
If you're not sure you've got the material to back it up. So it's a case of...
Well, and there's also, you know, it's finding, tracking down the source material, because sometimes you just want the hard data, like... Fireball XL5 is such and such a length, and it's powered by such and such a method. You know, sometimes people have written about that kind of thing, sometimes they haven't in the past. So, you know, just trying to find the stuff to draw upon in the first place, I imagine, can be quite challenging. Yeah. So when you're writing the episodes, are you keeping in mind sort of, oh, well, when we come down to it, we'll use this clip here, you know, we'll... Or was it a little more freeform?
I think I put in into the script, insert shot of such and such here. So to give an example, there are many instances where Thunderbird 2 will do something very specific. It will use a piece of equipment that maybe only appears in one episode or two episodes. So when you're talking about it, you just, you know, say cut to shot of magnetic grabs from End of the Road, or... cut to shot of pod 6 from the Perils of Penelope, that sort of thing. So yeah, I did sort of centralize and revolve certain parts of the script around what I knew I was going to be using later in the edit. Although a lot of the scripts were written with the potential to be quite fluid and freeform in the middle. So I might have, when I was writing the script, had one particular shot in mind, but when I came around to doing the edit later, I might have felt that another shot worked better. So there were a bit of both, really, a bit of mix and match.
Yeah, just drawing upon that encyclopedic knowledge that you have right there. Okay, so you have an armful of scripts under your arm. I'm not quite sure where I was going with that. Oh, you have all the scripts finished.
See, I was thinking that I might have had a leg full of scripts under my elbow.
That would be difficult for you. So you finished all the scripts. What happens next?
Okay, well, scripts are done. I send them to Jamie Anderson for approval. Get back a sort of... date for the recording, so and he tells me if there's anything in particular that needs fixing or anything that conflicts with any sort of ideas for the channel. But thankfully on this time it went through fine. He approved the scripts. I think one of the changes I made just quite near the end was I had originally written the Parker script as the original scripts were written in just the style of Parker's accent, so with apostrophes in places and with H's in front of certain words. But I thought, just, you know what, I'll let David Graham just decide where the best places to do this.
David Graham knows where to drop the H's and put them back in again.
not his first rodeo. So I did what I call the normalized Parker script, which is just writing it in plain English and letting him decide. So that's the version we ended up going to the studio with. So yeah, studio dates were set. I believe it was the 5th of December last year. So I flew over the preceding evening, stayed over, got up in the morning, went to the studio, and you know, had a word with David, just let him know what was in store. And then the process of recording began.
Okay, well, that must have been... So you were sat behind the glass, presumably?
I was,
and
yes.
And just letting him do his work. So he would have had the script, your scripts in front of him, and just go through them one by one? Or...
That's it. So essentially, we did them in order, in release order, really. So it would have started with Thunderbird 1 and worked its way all the way through to Thunderbird 5. So it was myself, our sound engineer, who was also called Jerry, ironically enough.
With a G,
yes. He had a physical copy of the script in front of him. and was sort of going through it at the same time behind the sound desk, just making sure that all the words were caught properly and there were no anomalies with the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Jamie was sat behind with the script on the laptop, also sort of just watching progress. And
yeah.
Jamie, being the director of the piece, of course, you know,
he was very much directing it. Yeah,
he was taking notes and just checking. And I was really acting as sort of consultant, if anything, just in terms of the technical info. So the pronunciation of certain specific words. I think at the end of one of the episodes, I can't remember which one it was at the moment, possibly Fireball, that there was a reference to OD-60 from Danger at Ocean Deep. And I believe on the first take, David quite rightly referred to it as OD-60. And I just made a mental note to at the end of the take to mention it to Jamie so that we could get that corrected. Because, well, it's perfectly fine to say that. I mean, it would just be a bit out of character.
It makes sense to... Yeah, it definitely makes sense to say that. But it's one of those things like...
The fans,
people who watch Thunderbirds, they know what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think actually one of the most fun moments was we got round to recording XL5, and while David would blindfolded be able to tell you what Brains and Parker and Gordon all sound like, at that moment in time, he just couldn't remember quite how he had pitched Professor Matic originally.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into the recording booth with a YouTube clip of Professor Matic and Zuni having a sort of a bit of conversation in a moment of mischief. Showed David the clip. David sort of said, that's fine. I think I've got it. I went back out to the control booth and he just nailed it. I mean, you can hear in the video itself, David doing Professor Matic. It's like, it was one of the funniest things I'd ever heard because while Matic is supposedly a very serious scientific character, David just brings so much humor to the reading.
Yes.
And we were in hysterics in the control booth. It was just fantastic to listen and observe, really.
Okay. Well, Oh, it sounds great. I mean, what was it like hearing him do Parker live?
Bizarre. Very, very bizarre. I mean, people who are familiar with David's work and have seen him at conventions will know that he doesn't record these things separately. He doesn't do all of one voice and all of another. He will literally just switch between characters at the drop of a hat, as he would have done during the recording of the original episodes. And to suddenly hear Parker, you know, come to life, I did take a video clip off it at the time, actually, and you can just see, even in the control box, we're loving it.
suddenly it's childlike wonder coming in.
I mean, that was last year. That was, 5 months ago now, and I'm 5 or 6 months ago, it's still not sinking in that he actually did it, you know. I'm editing it, and I'm thinking, oh, it's David Graham doing Parker, but it doesn't, I don't make the connection in my head that this was stuff that I wrote. This is just, I'm just editing things that he said, really.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it feels like. It's a weird sense of surrealness.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So once the recording's all done, you managed to wrap that up in
morning recording session. So the session ran from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. That was 9 episodes recorded with a break in the middle. And, you know, you got to remember that David is in his early 90s now. He's not the sprightly young figure that he was when the original series was recorded. Having said that, though, I don't think mentally that he's aged a day. In fact, if anything, he's even sharper now than he was then. just absolutely fascinating man. We had a lovely conversation over lunch just about, you know, what he's been up to and all sorts of things. And I said to him, David, it's amazing that you can still do Gordon. You can still, you know, make yourself sound like you're in your 20s. And he said that he puts that down to giving up meat 50 years ago. And he gave up chicken sort of about, I think, maybe 10, 15 years ago now.
Really?
Because he had seen a documentary about, you know, battery farming and things and thought that it was, you know, awful and rightly so. And that put him off the idea of eating chicken. So he really only eats fish and vegetables and fruit and that kind of thing. And, you know, if I have half as much energy when I'm anywhere near his age, you know, I'll be counting myself very fortunate because he's...
If you are considering a voiceover career at the age of 90, take on this little bit of health advice from the Security Hazard Podcast.
that's
fantastic. Those stories, that's great.
In fact, the last thing that happened before he left the studio, we were arranging for him to get picked up again, and we were using get his car to come and pick him up, using one of those tracking apps. And we were, the three of us, Jimmy and David and I, were sitting at the table, basically watching the screen on this smartphone. And David just said, "It's amazing, you know, that we have this technology now that you can just track a car to the door. I mean, this is the sort of stuff Jerry was talking about back in the 60s. I was like, yeah. I mean, it's weird when you think about it like that, but that's exactly what it's like.
Wonderful.
So that was fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
Then comes the next major hurdle, which is getting the sound files through. Which, to be fair to the studio, we got them that night. There was no delay getting the sound files, which was fantastic. Yeah. And then
work started.
Work started. So that's where I approached your good self, Jack, because. I felt that the project warranted a bit of extra special treatment. So rather than using my DVD frame grabs and such for the videos, I figured we're pushing the boat out here. Let's do this properly. Let's use the HD clips. And because
the proper HD clips.
The proper HD clips.
We're talking clips. Not the... Although they did end up getting cropped down anyway, which I think works just fine. But the... Not the UK Blu-ray release that was done by ITV. We're talking, my copy happens to be the US Shout Factory Thunderbirds, at least for Thunderbirds. For Captain Scarlet, we were using the network release. And then for Fireball, we used clips from... This is Super Mario Nation, which was released in HD, and then Stingray, we actually just stuck with the DVD release, just for the range of episodes. No Blu-ray release. No Blu-ray release yet. Anyway.
I'd love to see a Stingray Blu-ray release.
That would
it's
be
long
lovely.
Overdue, but I think
anyway. So that was to get the HD. Get the episodes in HD.
Yeah, and of course you assisted with other things as well, such as the sound wave was an idea.
Yes.
That I think I'm not even sure who came up with the sound wave idea to begin with, but
We were generally just collaborating on trying to figure out what the look of the show was going to be, because we knew it was going to be clips from the episodes, and we knew obviously we had David Graham's audio down. And we knew we would cut in bits from other characters with archive, recordings of characters like Jeff and things like that. But we didn't necessarily know, how's it going to start? What's the intro going to look like? Is there going to be music underneath? How's it all going to kind of come together? How are we going to marry all of this together? So we, came up with a few sort of things that I think made the series that little bit extra special that kept it nice and distinctive. It's hard to know where to start with all that sort of thing, really.
Well, I think really what I had done initially was come up with what I thought a good look for the layout would have been, which was to have sort of the blue squares in the background, but have the video window as sort of a 4:3 ratio square on the left-hand side of the screen. With a character box permanently on the top right, and technical information in the form of text being displayed beneath that on a sort of rolling banner type thing. And I think I ran with that idea for quite a while. In fact, I edited the first half of the Thunderbird 1 video like that. And then it didn't seem right. It just felt like it was missing something.
It might have been a little bit kind of static in a way. It's kind of not enough motion and excitement kind of going through it. Although it kind of tied in with the idea of it being like a technical readout and a presentation and things like that, I think switching to having the clips being full screen and then just cutting away to other things as needed just gave it a little bit more excitement to it.
Well, I hope so.
Well, we certainly hope so. That's not really for us to decide. But so it was things like that. And I love the blue background. And the technical drawings, like the elevations and things like that, those were all you. You drew all of those, didn't you?
Yeah, I don't consider myself to be artistic in drawing skills or in many other ways, but especially in drawing skills, I freely admit I cannot draw to save my life. But that was just something I came up with. I thought, I want to do something that makes it a little bit more than just clips. I want to do something that says, oh, that's a Century 21 Tech Talk thing.
Well, and there was the challenge of there were certain things in the script that were not realized on screen.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain things you just never see.
And there's only two real ways of doing that. You either do it by a static image of some sort, like the sort that Chris Thompson was kind enough to provide for us. Chris being
yes.
another...
Yes, well, we will talk about Chris's contribution. Yes, we will talk about that.
That's fine. We'll come on to that later. And the other one was the drawings, which I think, Jack, that you possibly suggested based on an old favourite TV programme that we both used to enjoy watching, Scrap Heap Challenge.
Scrap Heap Challenge. If anyone's ever seen that, it's a show presented by Robert Llewellyn
and
Lisa Rogers.
Yeah.
And... basic premise of the show is there's a scrap heap and two teams are challenged to build a specific type of vehicle out of this pile of scrap. And over the course of the show, of each episode, to explain the build process of what was going on, they would have these little animated sections where simple, 2D line drawings of the proposed vehicle were shown in motion and with the background grid moving around and things like that. And it just, that was the kind of look I thought, I really like that look. So I hope we're able to do something like that. And Andrew was able to bring it to life in certain ways, because the animation, there wasn't necessarily too much going on with the animation, but just enough to indicate what was happening to make it look like something that brains had just quickly mocked up to suggest, oh, by the way, this is what this looks like when this is going on, you know.
Well, and hopefully just slightly better than his drawing in Pit of Peril when he drew the Sidewinder as a box with squiggly yes. legs. He was under a lot of pressure yes. at the time, though, so we'll just give yes. him that one.
Yes, brains' artistic talents have improved greatly since then. but going back to Chris's artwork, I mean, yeah, you and I have known Chris for a very long time, and obviously anyone should know about his fantastic 3D artwork that he puts together based on all sorts of Gerry Anderson items. And one of the things that he is known for putting together was shots of the vehicles being built sort of while they were in development and kind of telling the story about how these things came together. I think we were keen to incorporate those. So I know some of the artwork, was there anything he specially produced for the episodes, or was
yes.
it all stuff? Okay.
As you say, it was basically some elements of the script were inspired by Chris's art, and the backstories for Thunderbird 2, 3, and 4 were all based on the information Chris had provided with his artwork, which were
right.
done a number of years prior. However, he had never done an image of Thunderbird 1 under construction, which I asked
right.
him if he would mind mocking that up for us specifically just for this series, which he did very kindly do that. And of course his graphics dominate the closing credits.
Yes.
And when each vehicle is initially introduced as well. But the construction sequences for Thunderbirds 2, 3, and 4, and for Stingray as well, all existed prior to the series being written. And I thought, wouldn't it yeah. be fun to put those in? Also, another thing that existed was for the Stingray video, spoilers for those of you who haven't heard it yet, was the concepts for the Wasp Patrol vessels that allocated numbers 1 and 2 before Stingray number 3 came
yes.
along. And I was determined to use those images as well, because they're rather fantastic. Yeah. To the degree, in fact, that the French Volume 2 box set of Stingray mistakenly used one of Chris's image of Thresher number 1 right on the front of the official box set.
Something that is not, you know, it's not canon necessarily. Well, it is now.
It is now, yeah.
It wasn't canon before. They just... you know, someone presumably Googled, oh, stingray, and came up with that image and decided to stick it on the front, even though it doesn't look... It doesn't look very much like Stingray at all. The whole point is it's an earlier prototype sort of thing.
But so that I believe that French version of the DVD has now been changed to the Stingray itself is on it. but if you go onto Google Images, or indeed if you live in France and can get yourself to a DVD shop that may have some old copies, you'll be able to see the original version of Stingray Volume 2. With Chris's Thresher artwork.
And we can confirm that Chris was not paid.
Chris was not paid, he was not consulted, and he was not informed. It was completely
and
by
he
chance.
he was not terribly happy either.
He was not terribly happy, and I think it's very fair to say that understandably so. Especially with we're not going to get bogged down in it, but especially with recent developments regarding copyright and so forth and use of creative projects by people without consent. It's just not very nice if you put a lot of work into something and someone comes along and takes it. Now, I can appreciate in this situation, it probably wasn't done maliciously. It was done in good faith with it just happened to be a mistake. And now more than anything, I think it's a funny story. And I think Chris sort of sees it that way now as well.
yes, absolutely. Yeah. So talking about the end credits, actually, I mean, again, did you have something clearly in mind? Were you like, yes, I kind of want to emulate the Thunderbirds end titles, or did that kind of just come afterwards?
I believe I initially had two ideas for the end titles. It was going to begin with, I think it was going to be the 2D line animations moving around and doing various things. And then I thought, no, I don't want to overuse this. I want to keep it just specifically for the actual...
For presentation purposes.
Presentation purposes, yeah. Exactly. So then I thought, well, why not go with the Thunderbirds titles? Initially, they were slightly different in that... The end titles were the full length of the original theme music, so they ran for the same length of time. And I think we watched them a couple of times, but we agreed they were nice and everything. But I think it was probably yourself, Jack, that said they do go on a bit. And
well, when you're looking at something YouTube length that's only going to be a few minutes long anyway, you don't want your end titles to run for
almost half the length
too long, because most people will have switched off and stopped watching anyway.
Yeah, so
potentially
heaven forbid. We figured let's cut it down to sort of maybe a third of the overall length of that, just enough time to have a nice look at the image and then that's it really. So I think that's just how those came about. And as a lot of people on YouTube noticed, the order of the images and the credits did dictate the order that the episodes were released in. That was mainly to space it out, to try and get a few different voices in a reasonably regular sequence, and also not so we just had Thunderbird 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight after each other, which might have been potentially a bit monotonous.
Yeah, I love the episode order. I think it's great. I think the focus of it is really good, and I actually really liked ending. And I know it's the most recent episode, but Thunderbird 5 may have been my favorite episode. It was certainly my favorite one to work on, I think, just because. Thunderbird 5 is a real challenge in terms of not only finding things to talk about, but certainly in terms of finding clips of it.
Yes, I honestly thought there was going to be an awful lot more still images and blueprint style sequences in it, but
you made it work. I think made it work.
Well, thank you very much. I think it was a surprise to me going back and seeing how many shots of the interior, especially of Thunderbird 5, that there were in the series.
Yeah.
And I think spicing it up a little bit by switching between Series 1 and Series 2 shots, just to give it a bit of visual interest, was also good. Also, I did not realise that the shot of Thunderbird 5 from the feature film Thunderbird 6 went on as long as it did.
Yeah.
it's quite a nice slow pan in Slow zoom.
I should say, those of you who don't have the same encyclopedic knowledge that we have of Thunderbirds, or that we claim to have of Thunderbirds, there is basically only one shot of Thunderbird 5 used in for most of the series.
Yeah.
And it's the shot of, you know, you're focusing on the Earth's atmosphere and then the camera pans up to Thunderbird 5. And that's basically reused to establish, as an establishing shot, every single time it appears. After that, you're only left with a handful of other options, including, you know, when Thunderbird 3 docks with it and then when it leaves. And then after that, you're basically left with a couple of little bits that appear in the feature films. After that, there's nothing else left.
If you want to get super technical, I think there's maybe one other shot of it in a Zoom Ice Lolly advert, but in very, very low quality.
Yes. But we didn't need to resort to it because you were very creative in the way that you, yeah, just worked around what was available. And also that's where the line drawings and the technical drawings actually really helped, because, again, you were able to show things that never turned up in the original series. But clearly, you know, the vehicle had that function. It was just never demonstrated.
And I also, of course, wanted to throw a nice little gentle nudge in for fans of Thunderbirds Argo by implying that Brains had considered a space elevator concept.
Oh, yes.
Something that, yes, of course, is very much a part of the functionality of the new Thunderbird 5 in the new series, a series which we both very much admire and enjoy, and are looking forward to the new episodes, which are starting... I think it's a week today, actually, in the UK.
Yes, very exciting. Well, at least when we're recording this, they're coming out. It's very, very soon. Yeah, very exciting.
So, yes, it's just to confirm, if anybody thought I was having a poke at or a pop at Thunderbirds Argo, I was not having a harsh pop at them. It was very much a nudge and a wink to say, but Thunderbird 5 does have a space elevator if you watch Tag. And
yeah,
it's a great thing. It's a great piece of kit, and, you know, Tag's a great show.
It's a really nice idea.
I think it's just there's plenty of room to like both. Plenty of room to like both.
Yeah, but is there a favorite episode of Century 21 Tech Talk that you have that stands out for you?
Well, I'm actually quite pleased with how Stingray turned out. I was a bit nervous about it because, as you say, we didn't have access to the same degree of Blu-ray footage. I think we were fortunate with Fireball in that I'm going to say four episodes that we had.
Yes, and there are four episodes of Stingray that are available on Blu-ray via the This Is Supermarination and the HD 21 set. But there was a sense that it didn't seem necessary to limit ourselves to just the episodes that were available in HD for the case of Stingray.
Yeah, I think so. Stingray has an awful lot going for it, spread out over a lot of different episodes, whereas pretty much all of the main features of Fireball are contained within, happily contained within those four episodes that were available to us in HD. I think that we resorted to using one shot in DVD quality, which is the shot of Fireball landing back at Space City again, which wasn't on any of the HD episodes. But Stingray, I think it just turned out lovely. There was a lot of different sequences I'd actually forgotten about and was delighted to see that they actually do exist, such as the Aqua Sprites. I hadn't remembered that there were as many different clips of the Aqua Sprites as there are in the Golden Sea. That was a nice surprise. I'm pleased with the additional little bit at the end of the Stingray episode, getting a chance to sort of put Thunderbird 4 and Stingray together.
That was a lovely touch. And that wasn't scripted, was it? That's just something you were editing and came up with.
It was maybe scripted as one line. I think it said something like, Thunderbird 4 and Stingray engage a squadron of terror fish, something along those lines. But
just something casual like that, you know?
I hadn't specifically thought, I know how I'm going to make this work or anything. I thought, well, if I can make it work when it comes to the edit, I'll stick it in. Otherwise, I'll just end it with Gordon disappearing when Battle Stations is called. I thought that turned out great. Obviously, I've got a bit of a soft spot for the Fab 1 episode as well, being Parker and... getting a chance to explain what happens to Fab 1 at the end of Thunderbird 6. All different things like that. What about yourself? Do you have a specific favourite?
Well, as I say, Thunderbird 5 actually, came out really nicely. I'm really, really happy with the way that one turned out. I never would have expected to get that much material out of a vehicle that appears so little. Thunderbird 4 was also a really nice one, I think. I've always liked Thunderbird 4. I think it's got so many good features, and actually features a lot more prominently in the show than you think it might. You know, being just a pod vehicle, but it actually gets a lot of action.
Yes, it does.
And I think the episode that we put together came out really nicely. I'm very happy with the show overall. I think, considering what Century 21 Tech Talk could have been, which was, you know, as I say, Brains talking about the vehicles with a few clips, you know, overlaid over the top, I think the balance we managed to strike with bringing in a bit of humor and, you know, adding in other characters and having the Chris's artwork and then your artwork as well, I think all of that combined just made it something just a little bit more special.
I think
that's what made it good as a series in its own right.
Well, it's a team effort. I mean, Jimmy's name comes up first in the credits. A lot of people, you know, say,
yes,
you know, thanks, Jimmy, for the series. But it really was.
Well, and good on him for commissioning it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And letting us work on it.
that is first and foremost, really. I mean, if Jimmy hadn't said yes, well, quite obviously, we wouldn't be talking about it. Yeah. So, you know, thanks to Jimmy for, you know, having the faith that we would be able to get this project working to the requisite, you know, standard. You know, thanks, Jack, for all your hard work sourcing all those HD clips and for all your suggestions and sort of things. Like, I was having a difficult time thinking, oh, well, what can we do about this bit? And you suggested, well, why not use this particular scene or talk about that. thanks to and for creating the sound waves as well, which look fantastic. And a lot of people have said, oh, I really like the way that you can see what they're saying at the bottom on the sound waves. And thanks to Chris for all his artwork, and to Jerry for recording it and everything, and to Jerry and Sylvia for basically coming up with the whole thing 50+ years ago.
And thanks to you for coming up with the idea for this show and bringing us a little bit of extra David Graham goodness.
Well,
with all of his voices,
it was an absolute pleasure. It really was. I mean, I've met David a few times before. Lovely gent, as I say. But I always think in these sort of situations, when you meet someone as a fan, you know, you sort of act accordingly. But when you meet someone, you've turned up as the writer of the project. You're working, they're working, you're working. And, you know, there's a sort of, it's a different dynamic. It's really, you know, they don't have to feel maybe slightly that they have to be on their game because they're talking to a fan and they have to
mighty higher than thou sort of thing.
Yeah, and so it's quite relaxed. It's a very nice atmosphere, and you can just sort of say, you know, what are you doing later today, and things he was asking me if I was heading back home, you know, flying home that night, and what I was up to. And I think he said that he was doing a gig for Peppa Pig the next day, voicing Grandpa Pig for it was for a trailer for the American networks.
Goodness me.
He's never stopped. He's like, he's still at the top of his game and still going. So thanks very much to David also for obviously taking part in it.
Yeah. Now, people want a second series.
We hinted
that there might be a second series. Can we say anything about it?
Say anything? Well, ever since series one, you know, wrapped in terms of me, you know, finishing the episode,
in terms of editing
and
it,
I'm waiting
it together,
for
them
to
be
broadcast. I just cannot help but think of that famous clip that you and I both know from Alan Partridge. Have I got a second series? Have I got a second series? And I just keep thinking about it, and I'm just like, wouldn't it be lovely if I did get to say, Jack, we've got a second series. Come on, let's spitball ideas here. I guess at the minute, there's a slight teaser at the end of series one. I cannot say outright, yes, we definitely have a second series. I would like there to be a second series. You and I have discussed, if there was to be a second series, what would we like to see in it? What would we tackle
And we've
next?
Taken into account things that people have been writing in.
We have, yes. We've
it's important to mention that. Things. Some people have suggested things that we actually wouldn't have thought of and now have thought, oh, maybe we will write that in. Maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah, so there's other things to consider. Again, it's very much up to Jimmy to say, yes, we'd like to have a second series. It's up to getting, you know, seeing if the voice artist is available to do it. There's a lot of different things.
And we
to
need
consider.
To, you know, we'll be thinking about, you know, what would we perhaps change? What might we do differently? Or, you know, things like that. So, yeah, lots of things to be considered and up in the air. And we're going to work very hard on trying to make that happen and trying to make people happy.
Yes, well, I think if people want a second series, you know, the best way to express that is to like the videos, share them with as many people as you can, comment on them to say, yes, we'd love to see more, and
suggest which vehicles you might like to see as well.
You know, you could say anything. I'm just looking up at the DVDs here, so you could say anything from the Space Police Cruiser to...
I want to see Torchy the Battery Boy's rocket.
Well, there you go, Torchy's rocket. That's going to be another fantastic one. But literally, don't limit yourselves to thinking in terms of Minecraft. I mean, if you want to see sort of more obscure vehicles, if we can make it happen, we will try to do that. Just be creative. I mean, there's probably not much chance of us talking about Tex Tucker's horse, but they're,
well,
you know,
not technically Century 21.
Technically,
to be
not,
honest,
I suppose.
And not actually tech. It's a horse.
I suppose Tex Tucker's pistols would be a tech of sorts, but again, not Century 21. So.
We're being ridiculous now.
Ridiculous would be something else. Ridiculous would be, can we have a breakdown off the truck from Crossroads to Crime that the bank heist or the metal heist takes place in? You know, if you'd like to see that, well, we might.
If you'd like to see that, you could ask.
Might be able to arrange it. Might be able to get David Graham to come back and reprise his role as Johnny from that movie.
Yeah.
There you go. Put it on the list, Jack.
Enough.
Put it on the list.
Yeah, put it on the list. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me for this little discussion. Just, you know, if anyone happens to be interested in learning more about the series, then hopefully now they've learned far more than they ever wanted to know about it. But otherwise, I've been Jack.
And I have been, and still am, AC.
All right. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.